Greetings, folks. Welcome to episode 13 of How to Get Away with Law, a unofficial podcast for the hit TV show How to Get Away with Murder by ABC. This is your host, Kim, and we are going to start out with the recap first from ABC.com. Nate is arrested, processed, and sent to a prison cell. Rebecca is summoned to talk to the police. Wes needs to handle it with her. Rebecca pretty much throws him under the bus in her interview. In other news, Michaela, posing as a lady named Tammy, cozies up to the prosecutor on the case to get inside the inside scoop on the case. She finds out what Rebecca said about Nate. Wes promises to clear things up. He heads over to the police station to learn that Rudy Walters was shipped to a psychiatric hospital after his OD and arrest. Annalise's mama, Ophelia Harkness, guest star Cicely Tyson, blows into the Keating home like a cyclone. She gives a full recap of what's been going on in her daughter's life these past few months. When her motivational attempt to get Annalise out of bed falls flat, Ophelia gives her a little TLC. This doesn't last long. Ophelia has strong opinions regarding their roots and Annalise's desire to leave them behind. Jolene Samuels is a nurse who is accused of raping a patient. With Annalise not at the top of her game, Bonnie takes the lead on a new case. Her opening statement doesn't instill a lot of confidence for the client. Bonnie bounces back by effectively discrediting any eyewitness. The next witness, however, does more damage. A tech expert reveals that Jolene went onto a website detailing her sexual encounter with the plaintiff. Bonnie needs to prove that the sex was consensual. Oliver is a little upset that Connor has never introduced him to Annalise or any of his friends. He feels like he works with them thanks to all the hacking he does for their cases. His latest discovery is that the man accusing Jolene of rape is gay. Bonnie is shut down when she tries to use this to her advantage. She's in over her head, but she can't ask Annalise for help. Asher learns that the plaintiff in the case visited the hospital's legal staff after the alleged rape. Bonnie realizes why. The plaintiff and the hospital's lead attorney are lovers. The two of them set up a joint bank account to cash in on their scam. All charges against Jolene are dropped. Bonnie celebrates by hooking up with Asher in the parking garage. Neither of them realizes that Frank is a few cars away watching them through his rearview mirror. While everyone else is in court, Annalise and Ophelia have another verbal sparring session. Things deteriorate at a rapid clip. Annalise learns that her mother knew what her uncle had done to her. Ophelia reveals that she was also violated. That's what men do. They take things. Annalise doesn't buy her mother's way of addressing this harsh reality. She orders her to go home. Ophelia later recalls the time she first realized what Annalise's uncle had done to her. A short time after that, she took advantage of a night when the guy passed out drunk. She shuffled Annalise and her brothers and sisters away. A short time later, the house that Ophelia loved burned down to the ground. Annalise's despicable uncle was inside when it did. Ophelia lets her daughter know that sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do. Annalise takes hold of her mother's arm and pulls her close. Annalise shoos away Michaela from Nate's court hearing. She'll take care of this. She visits with Nate in a holding room. There's a camera recording every word they say to each other. Annalise speaks carefully and deliberately. Her words don't reflect the true nature of her visit. She slips Nate a note instructing him to fire his lawyer and call a phone number. As Connor finally introduces Oliver to his friends, Wes tells Laurel that Rudy Walters may have had something to do with Lila Stanegard's murder. He wonders if he was wrong about Rebecca the whole time. Wes and Laurel dig deeper. They find a lost-looking Rudy in his hospital room. There are scratches above his bed like the ones in Wes's apartment. When Rudy sees a photo of Rebecca, he repeatedly utters the word wet. Wes realizes that he's referring to the water tower where Lila's body was found. He has no idea, however, that Rebecca is tracking his cell phone. She knows exactly where he is. Alright, and that is it for the recap, and we're about to jump into the review here. And the last regular episode review of season one, because we're heading into the 2-hour finale next, this coming Thursday, and we'll get to that after the review. So, the first note I have here that, though Michaela didn't think it mattered that an innocent guy was blamed, she seems really disturbed about the situation now, having watched everything on the news, seeing the proceedings of the situation with Nate and him being accused, and she just looks very, very upset about it. And I remember not too long ago when I believe it was Laurel was talking about how an innocent man was going down for this, and Michaela said, what does it matter? Annalise is doing what she promised. But of course that guilt is eating her up because she's just an over-anxious human being anyway. poor Nate having to bend over and cough as he's being processed into prison is something we probably are used to seeing on TV to make you think prison is terrible. Well, prison most likely is terrible. I've never been a prisoner. But I'm going to have to go ahead and say that Nate has a really nice body. You know, I'm not really much of a fan of men, but he has a nice solid bod. So Annalise, I can't blame her. When they took Nate to a cell and you have all these people scream at him and this guy said, I'm going to make you my bitch. I feel like Nate could beat the crap out of most of those people in the prison. But like I said, it's probably just emphasizing prison life is terrible and Nate's in a crappy position. He's now in prison for something he didn't do. Now, to give some comic relief after everything with Nate, Cecily Tyson as Annalise's mother appears. Her name is Ophelia, but I think she is best referred to as what she says to Bonnie and Frank. She's the VIP, because their boss came out of her V and her father's P, VIP. Maybe I should just call her VIP the rest of the episode, because that's pretty funny. She has some great one-liners. Now, when VIP goes and sees Annalise, we see a lot of tough love, and Annalise is kind of being a baby at this point, but can we really blame her? She's in a crappy situation, and she's deeper than I think she's ever been. And she just kind of wants to vegetate and just ignore the world and just somehow get past this. Like, the world just continues on around her, and if she just stays in her room and in her bed, not showering, not eating, then she doesn't have to face up to everything. And we've all had those moments where you were just depressed and just wanted to hide away in your room and do nothing. The new case they have for this week, Bonnie has to handle since Annalise is not feeling up to it. And, of course, we've seen Bonnie's timid attempts, especially with when they were going to get a warrant to search Annalise's house, and she failed at that. So, of course, we all have that feeling in our stomach thinking, oh my goodness, I don't know how this is going to go with Bonnie at the forefront, but it gives a different and interesting dynamic, finally a case where somebody is going to be faltering, it seems like, because that's how they've been setting Bonnie up, as faltering, not feeling very strong, especially since Annalise isn't trusting in her. The nurse that they are representing says that she's not the prettiest girl in the room, and then of course they flash to Michaela and Laurel, which is not at all fair. It's not a lot of women can look all that great next to Michaela and Laurel. The case itself is a male rape, which I think this is a subject that should be in more shows. It's always, women, that's just the common storyline because it's reported more and it seems to happen more. But I just want to talk a little bit about male rape. Let's see. I did a little bit of poking around and found an article to see what the aftermath is like after men endure rape, which I feel like this is pertinent once we get later on in the notes as to why I looked this up and tried to compare it with the rape victim in the case and how that gives some clues as to what exactly was happening in this case and whether we could believe the rape victim or not. And here we go with the aftermath. Men who are raped usually, they struggle with some severe psychological after effects of the assault. Confusion regarding their sexual orientation is a common result. One survivor says, I really wonder about my sexuality. Gay, straight, bi, I still don't know. I went through a period when I became very promiscuous, both with men and women. Some men may become very homophobic, blaming gay men for subjecting them to a rape experience. Survivors may feel humiliated and angry at being forced to participate in such a sexual act and start blaming the gay lifestyle for what they had to go through. It is important to know, however, that most men who rape other men identify as heterosexual and are involved in consensual sexual relationships with women at the time they rape. It is not a need for sex with other men that drives them to rape. For them, rape is an act of violence and control, not of sexual gratification. And I'm going to stop here. I know this article is not about a woman raping a man, because we get into that sort of thing. It's because the stigma is, how can you rape a man? I mean, wouldn't a guy want to have sex with a woman? I was focusing more with this article on the effects of how men feel after rape, because I feel like the symptoms of what they go through might give us a little more insight into the character. And of course, like I said, it'll be made more apparent, hopefully, when we get later into this review. Now we have, figure out where I was at there. Rape survivor writes, "To see rape as a woman's issue is a form of male privilege. Most men would prefer not to surrender. In reality, anyone, man or woman, can be raped. Very often men will rape other men as a means of humiliation and degradation by intentionally feminizing them, including the use of verbally abusive language that is derogatory to women." One more point here, that victims just as female victims feel, men feel after rape, and there was a rape victim who said, "I asked myself why I do that, and I'm not sure. I really feel like it's the only thing I'm good for." And what he's referring to is basically the past sexual victimization and all of the actions that happen after, because some people become promiscuous, as the article stated earlier, and that, you know, it just gives you this feeling that the only thing you're good for is the sexual abuse, and it just creates this mental state. And that was just to go into the fact that men very well can be raped by a man or a woman. In this case, of course, apparently she was astride him, and he was in the hospital helpless, so of course you can see how this damages a man's psyche if he's being sexually abused and when he's feeling helpless and he is under treatment and most likely being taken advantage of. But like I said, all this information will make a little more sense later. When Bonnie is talking about the case at the beginning and she's trying to make her case as to why Miss Samuels is innocent, she makes a slip up and says that this is why Miss Samuels should be found guilty. And here we go, we're already thinking, oh, this isn't going to be any good, this is not going to go well, and Bonnie is going to bomb this, and this is the beginning of something daunting. I also want to know, as I watched the proceeding of the case, if Bonnie was possibly a failed lawyer before Annalise rescued her, or is she just rusty? I don't know, but her tactics, I guess it might just be confidence. She isn't sure exactly how to be as bold as Annalise. Annalise may have handed Sam right over to the law when she found out that he got Lila pregnant and that he killed her. That she let him go, but she wasn't yet willing to let the clothes go, though Mama VIP was ready to donate that stuff. And I think this was just a way to lead into the fact that VIP thinks that Annalise basically has put her old identity in a hand-me-down box, and that's going to be the crux of a lot of the argument as the episode goes on. There's an obvious issue between Annalise and her mom also with the fact that we find out, I'm not sure if it was mentioned before, if I knew before, that Annalise actually grew up as Anna May and then changed her name and wants her mom to respect that. But of course, when it comes to a black mama, because I am a black mama, you don't argue with mama. It's rough, and you're never going to win. I was glad that she boldly asked Annalise if she killed Sam, but Annalise doesn't decide to answer. I mean, what is she going to say? I mean, she can just leave it up to her mom's imagination. You know, Nate was in prison, so of course she doesn't feel like answering, and she also doesn't want to go into this. This is the reason why she's buried in her bed trying to ignore this whole thing. Now back to the case of the week. Poor Miss Samuels, she was so excited that she got to bang a hot dude that she had to post about it, and if you don't think you're very attractive and somebody attractive initiates sex with you, you're going to be so excited you want to tell the world. And we find out later that she comes from a religious background, so it's not like she can just go running around telling everybody. She had to do it anonymously under a name on a website. Now, as Bonnie is continuing to bomb and fail, she comes back to the office and is trying to figure out how they can make the rape victim look even guiltier than Miss Samuels. And the students start protesting all at once, and Bonnie just yells at them and shuts them down immediately and says, "Do you argue with Annalise?" And she tells them all to go do their work, and of course Asher, you know, is all fired up and hot about it. I find this funny that Connor asks if Asher would sleep with her, and of course Asher's like, "Who, Bonnie?" Well, you know, and Connor's like, "No, I'm talking about our client." And of course Asher goes into talking about how he's ridden questionable strange, and he's all humping around, and of course here comes VIP with her great one-liners talking about nobody wants to be on the receiving end of that. I love Asher. He's quite amusing. Speaking of Mama, also puts a smackdown on the students. They get a beat down from Bonnie and Mama tells them to straighten this place up. It looks like a wreck. While everybody is supposed to be cleaning up, Wes has the audacity to go upstairs to see Annalise, and I know he's worried about Rebecca and that they called Rebecca in to talk about the phone conversation she had with Nate because she had called him on the night of the murder. And Annalise is about to give him some more details, tells him to tell Rebecca to stick to her story. And of course Mama comes in and immediately goes on about how she's got a young student in the room and all of that. And if anybody had the theories about Annalise and Wes being related, Wes being her son, well, it doesn't seem like Grandma would know about that, Lynn. But I've already jumped off of the Wes's Annalise's son's train. And I just have to take a moment to go ahead and say about Rebecca, did I mention that Kate Finley is hot? Anyway, okay, back to the important stuff. I like that, once again, we go back to Oliver, the IT guy who is doing more hacking, and finds out that the rape victim is gay. Now, of course, you're thinking, okay, this is a good point for the case. This is going to help it turn around and give Bonnie a break from the situation she's going through. But when they get to the courtroom and she talks about the fact that he's gay, the judge and the defense just pretty much say, oh, this isn't relevant to the case. And as I stated before when I first started these podcasts, I'm no lawyer, but I feel like that is important because if anything, the lawyer that was representing the rape victim can say that this was more damaging to him psychologically, which should be why they should settle, because the man is gay and he has been raped by a woman. This could cause some sort of heterosexual issue. Pretty much the opposite of the article I was talking about, basically that he was raped by a woman. Maybe it might cause some confusion, because I know with men and women, when they are raped by somebody of a sex they're not attracted to, might still actually start voluntarily having sex with people of the sex that they didn't prefer before, after that situation. So I feel like that could have been a point they could have used in the defense of the rape victim, but it was thrown out. So I guess that was all on that one. Now we move back to two of the Keating Five. And Michaela says to Laurel one of the dumbest lines. Whenever have I done anything stupid? Well, always. Anybody who's watched Michaela, she's always doing stupid things. She's so impulsive and just freaks out. So I just think, I guess that was probably for us to answer in the audience. You always do stupid things, Michaela, because you are crazy. Bonnie has been lurking in the background too long not to realize when she's being lied to, and she talks to Frank when she's just guzzling Annalise's alcohol and sitting at her desk and just wallowing in the self-pity of possibly losing this case. And she confronts Frank with the fact that she thinks Annalise told him not to tell her about the murder and that the students had killed Sam, and that is why she can't go upstairs to talk to Annalise to help her about this case. I believe Annalise just thinks Bonnie is weak and isn't good enough for much of anything but to get the little things she needs done, finished for her, and, you know, of course to look around and find information is what Bonnie is good at. Now we move to finding out what Tammy uses the power of her cleave and V to get into the Nate cases, talks to somebody that's on the case, and she gets the info that tips her off that basically about the contact between Rebecca and Nate and the phone call that was made that night. And also, I want to know, do you think that Michaela, a.k.a. Tammy, actually gave up the V to get the information? Because she does make a reference that, of course, Connor's not the only one who can bang his way to get some information. Who knows? She's not engaged anymore. Whatever. This also means that Rebecca, there's some shade cast on her again. Should we trust her? Well, at least she's still hot. After that, we find out that Wes finds that Rudy was actually put in a psych ward, and of course, he's continuing on his Rudy search. But we'll get more into that later. We go back to Annalise and her mom in the kitchen, and they just have this all-out fight that involves, well, more like Annalise throws the glass in the middle of it, but we get more detail that Annalise's uncle Clyde sexually abused her, and she didn't think her mom knew about it. And it's pretty sad because from my experience and from hearing from several other people in my life, that sexual abuse of black women in the family is something common. And sexual abuse in general seems to be common for women, but of course, this entire episode, the theme pretty much is rape, as disturbing as it is, but it unfortunately is life. And I really wish it wasn't something that we deal with, but this show is good at talking about things that we should be aware of and things that are real and things that we should face up and understand exist. After this fight in the kitchen, Annalise just tells her mom to go home. She's pretty much had it, and it doesn't seem like they're getting anywhere. They're just consistently going around in circles having the same argument, and it's just not working out, and we see why they didn't stay in contact in the first place. Moving on, Asher starts researching and finds some information that breaks the case open for Bonnie. He says something and something clicks and makes sense. Now we get to the courtroom and we get to Bonnie's moment of glory where they talk about settling the case, and of course the lawyer of the hospital decides, yeah, he wants to settle, and Bonnie's like, okay, can you confirm that you want to settle? And of course he confirms it, and then Bonnie just pulls out the bomb and talks about how they have a joint bank account, and that basically what's going on is when the settlement happens, part of the $500,000 goes, it's split between the lawyer and the rape victim, who we find out is not really a rape victim. They just framed Miss Samuels so that they get the settlement, and this is Bonnie's moment of triumph, and I'm glad for it because she was really struggling, and I feel maybe they were making Bonnie weak and alienating her earlier so that this moment could be felt a little deeper. I guess they just needed somebody to be there to be the semi-Annalise until Annalise was okay, and I guess Bonnie is the one you want to build up because she is the lawyer, and I think Frank was just the muscle. After the case is successful and Miss Samuels gets off, so does Bonnie, and she gets all up on Asher. And then we pan over, Frank is in his car and sees it happening. We already knew that he knew what was going on, so that's not a surprise. Finally, Oliver is introduced to the Keating Five, and at the time, Wes finally answers the phone when Rebecca calls, and he tells her, oh, he's at the library, he's got this huge paper he has to do, and Laurel catches him and says she's used that on Con, and she asks what's going on, and he pretty much tells her that Rebecca lied about Rudy, and that this is connected to Lila's death. We go back to see more time with Mama and Annalise, because Mom is leaving, and she starts combing Annalise's hair, and as a black woman with natural hair, I had to laugh about having nappy hair comb, my nappy kitchen comb. It's painful, but I've had to do it. But that's why I keep it short now, it's painful. But then we find out that this is when Mama killed Clyde by fire, basically ferreted away the kids and then used some flammable hooch that he was always drinking and set him on fire because she caught him after he left Annalise's room once. So we find out this is probably why Mama's mad. She had to destroy the huge house she loved, and here Annalise has this huge house, and they have this rift in their relationship, and finally they get to the point of resolution that they needed to get to, because Annalise needs something to keep her strong, something to keep her going, and as we can see later, this does help. Michaela goes and does another stupid thing in this episode and goes to Nate's trial, but Annalise appears just in time, pretty much talks sense into her and tells her to get out. And then after Annalise goes and meets Nate in the holding room, and they pretty much play it up for the camera and have this conversation that has nothing to do with what Annalise is there for, and is able to slide him a number. And I'm not sure whose number it is. It's obviously not hers. I don't think it could be Bonnie, because Bonnie works for the law firm that Annalise owns. So who in the world is it? I can't think of anybody else that Annalise would trust, but are they going to introduce a new person in the finale for us? I'm not sure. Or maybe they are just going to end on the Nate case, which I'm not sure if I'm upset about that. After 2 hours of a finale, I guess they could wrap it up, but do we want to take this into season two? I kind of don't. I can see them doing it, but I kind of want this to be resolved and Nate taken out of jail, or us getting closer to finding out the truth of this and seeing how this is going to set up season two for us, because I do believe there's actually going to be a season two. Now, Laurel makes a fake ID, and her and Wes visit Rudy, justifying that Rudy's all messed up on drugs and has genetic issues and everything, and they see that there are scratches just on his bedroom wall, just in the hospital, just like there is in Wes's apartment, which was Rudy's old apartment. And when Laurel's asking questions and doesn't get any response, Wes just shows a picture of Rebecca, and Rudy just says, "What?" And of course, they connect this to it has to be Lila in the water tank. And my guess is maybe he saw Rebecca coming back all wet because it was after Lila ended up in the water tank. I'm not sure how I feel about this with Rebecca, but let me move on to the next point before I start discussing that. Rebecca was triangulating where Wes's cell phone was at that moment, and she sees that he's at Rudy's hospital. And number one, I'm wondering how she had access to do this sort of thing. I guess maybe it's a drug dealer thing? I don't know. And is she really lying about all of this? What is her part? How does she know Rudy, and why was she trying to cover that up? I'm not sure, but I'm at this point where I don't think that she was a murderer. I don't think she murdered Lila. I think she might have tried to save her, or maybe she jumped in irrationally and Lila was already dead. I have no idea, but I don't think it was Rebecca, but I guess we may find out in the season finale. Okay, guys, I'll stop rambling in your ear, but I would love to hear you guys ramble in my ear. And you can do that by emailing or sending an audio file to howtogetawaywithlaw@gmail.com, or you can tweet at getawaywithlaw, or you can also find the Facebook and like the page. Just search out How to Get Away with Law, and just tell a friend, send some voicemail. And guys, I'm really excited about this finale, and I hope you are. I'll talk to you as soon as we finish that up, and I watch it a few times and enjoy it and soak it up and hopefully discuss it with you guys. Until next time, this has been your host, Kim.